It's 12:06 and 85 degrees in Santa Fe as At Noon continues from KSFR News on Thursday, June 13th. Coming up this hour, more on the Whole Foods question of different languages being spoken in their stores. The ACLU is asking, is it okay to speak Tibetan but not Spanish? As police in Santa Fe continue to cite drivers for talking on a handheld cell phone, the National AAA organization finds that hands-free is no safer. U.S. Senator Martin Heinrich of New Mexico calls for Senate action on climate change. I'm Bill Dupuy, back with those stories, 60 Seconds with Christopher Hagan, and more after headlines.
Still no containment to report in the 8,000-acre-plus Horoso fire burning east of Española. The fire is in extremely difficult terrain, accessible only by helicopter, in a region with abundant ground fuels for further growth. A special tactical team takes on management of the fire as of today. Meanwhile, at the 24,000-acre Thompson Ridge fire in the Jemez, containment has reached 60%. Current burning is occurring within its established perimeter line. And near Pecos, the Tres Lagunas fire is at 80% containment and on track for full suppression this weekend. Senator Tom Udall of New Mexico is calling for an independent investigation into the government spying on Americans' telephone and email records. Udall is a member of the Senate Appropriations Committee and says the head of the NSA has promised to cooperate.
I want to let you know I voted against the Patriot Act in 2001. Since then, several of us attempted to add privacy protections to these laws, but faced strong resistance. It's very, very difficult, I think, to have a transparent debate about secret programs approved by a secret court, issuing secret court orders based on secret interpretations of the law.
New Mexico's congressional delegation has jointly introduced legislation to strengthen the nation's science, technology, engineering, and math education and training programs, both nationally and here in New Mexico. Referenced as the STEM Squared Act, it includes a package of initiatives designed to improve student interest and performance in STEM skills from kindergarten through high school. All of our state's House and Senate members say it will help identify skills needed by the modern workforce, thereby providing students with tools for effective competition in the global economy. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development today awarded 19 New Mexico Native American communities just over $16 million for a broad range of affordable housing activities. The money can go toward both new and existent affordable housing development, as well as establishment of crime prevention and safety measures. The state prison south of Santa Fe has made plans to switch to the county water system and use its own wells for backup. The New Mexican reports that move will save millions of gallons of water a month. Local residents had been asking for the change, saying the decision will help preserve water for the nearby La Cienega community. The prison has been using as much as 6 million gallons of well water a month. Some of the legislation made law at the Roundhouse at the beginning of the year takes effect tomorrow. That includes the Fair Pay for Women Act that requires equal wages be paid irrespective of gender. Spaceport America's affiliated manufacturers and suppliers will receive limited liability in the event of a mishap. Television productions shooting six or more episodes in New Mexico will see their tax rebate rise from 25% to 30%. And just in time for Sunday brunch, hotels and dining establishments will be able to serve alcohol as of 11 a.m. instead of noon. Santa Fe police say burglaries declined by 35% in May compared to that same month in 2012. Then there were 228 combined residential, auto, and commercial burglaries. Last month, that number dropped to 149. The decline points to the continuing success of the department's Operation Full Court Press, which has detectives from the property crime, street crime, and narcotics teams all working together. The effort also entails following crime offenders through the legal system and working with prosecutors for stiffer penalties. The ACLU of New Mexico is urging Senators Udall and Heinrich to increase accountability of Customs and Border Patrol, saying our border cannot be a, quote, Constitution Light Zone. They're asking that CBP officials be required to wear lapel video cameras to record interactions in the field. They also advocate better training on the use of force and the creation of short-term custody standards that would guarantee immigration detainees access to food, water, medical care, and legal advice. The ACLU's appeal comes as the U.S. Senate identifies key priorities for immigration reform. Meanwhile, the ACLU continues its investigation into that dispute with a Whole Foods market in Albuquerque that allegedly has a no-Spanish policy with its employees. We'll have more on this story a bit later as At Noon continues. AAA New Mexico says that in-state drivers this week are paying an average of $3.51 for a gallon of regular unleaded gasoline. That's down a penny from last week and 12 cents less than the national average. Meanwhile, the newly launched U.S. Department of Energy's e-gallon website notes that New Mexicans with electric vehicles are paying just $1.12 to travel as far as they would on a gallon of gas. Much local attention has been given to the three wildfires currently burning around the Santa Fe region. There is another sizable fire downstate that is currently burning out of control near Silver City. The 19,000-acre Silver Fire in the Gila National Forest has forced some nearby residents to evacuate. Officials expect high fire activity today due to winds and dry thunderstorms. The fire started last Friday after a lightning strike. And weather for Santa Fe, slightly cooler both today and Friday under mostly sunny skies, upper 80s for highs today, mid-80s tomorrow. A 10% chance for afternoon and evening thundershowers today increases to 20% Friday. For KSFR News, this is Dan Garrity.
Dan, as an update to the three fires burning in the Santa Fe area, we're learning that a wildfire burning north of Colorado Springs exploded overnight, destroying hundreds of homes in its path and forcing nearly 40,000 people to flee the area. Local and federal agencies have struggled to contain that fire. It nearly doubled in size overnight to about 15,000 acres and has been burning through the pockets of thickly forested residential communities. On Wall Street, stocks are up at this hour across the board. S&P 500 hanging in above 1,600 points. Dow Jones is up 114 at 15,109. It's 12:14 on At Noon from KSFR News. The New Mexico ACLU is asking the Whole Foods grocery chain about its language policy in stores, particularly in stores in New Mexico. Do they or don't they prohibit employees from speaking languages other than English to each other? The question comes up after two Albuquerque employees were suspended temporarily because they were speaking Spanish to one another while working. But then the media started getting conflicting reports whether Whole Foods actually had a policy. A regional manager told media that, yes, Whole Foods expects all employees to speak to each other in English while they're working, but a local Whole Foods representative told KSFR News there is no such policy. The ACLU wants an answer and has sent Whole Foods a letter reminding them it is against the law to prohibit any given language from being spoken, even Tibetan. ACLU lawyer Laura Ives joins us. What have you learned as you research this case on behalf of the two employees you now represent?
I think that the main thing that we highlighted in our letter to Whole Foods is that there is indication that this is discrimination against Spanish speakers and not just foreign language speakers generally.
How so?
In the department where this policy had been announced, this no Spanish policy, there are other team members who speak different languages. The sushi team communicates and continues to communicate in their language, and there are two women from Tibet that also communicate in a foreign language. Those team members were not admonished, and nobody has focused on the use of their language.
Interesting. So there are members from, say, Japan and from Tibet?
Correct.
At Whole Foods?
Correct.
And they regularly speak their language?
And continue to do so without repercussion.
Well, Whole Foods has made contradictory statements. What is to be believed? Do they have a policy against other languages, or don't they have a policy?
According to my clients, they do not have an overreaching policy against other languages. Their announced policy was intended to eliminate Spanish speaking in the store and not other languages.
We got conflicting reports. The local Whole Foods senior employee, if not manager, here in Santa Fe said there was no policy. I guess a regional manager said there was, but you say it's now confined really to just Spanish on the assumption that others can speak it, thus it must be just Spanish.
Well, there is actually a policy contained in the Whole Foods handbook, and that policy states that there should be no foreign languages spoken except for on break and outside of the presence of customers, something to that effect. I don't know that I have it precisely accurately. That is not the policy, however, that they announced in the Whole Foods store in Albuquerque.
Mm-hmm. And the policy that they announced was this blanket, no other language policy.
No. The policy that they announced at the Whole Foods store in Northeast Albuquerque was no Spanish.
Ah.
They did not speak to other foreign languages.
And they voiced that to the two people who were terminated, suspended for a day.
That is correct.
Now, what has happened to their back pay for that day? Have they gotten it?
The two employees who were suspended for the day have been told that they would be paid for that day that they were suspended. And they should, we'll know for certain on Friday when they receive their paychecks if Whole Foods will honor that commitment.
If you're not seeking back pay, what are you seeking?
We would like a policy for New Mexico that respects our long history of valuing the diverse heritage of our state. And we would like a policy that permits employment, use of foreign languages in the workplace, especially Spanish.
Do you expect to reply by letter or some other form?
I have no expectation. I've asked that they contact me within a week, and if they do not, we will file charges with the Human Rights Commission.
Very well. Laura Shora Ives will stay in touch with you on this. Many thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
12:19 on At Noon from KSFR News. The issue of hands-free or handheld phones while driving continues around the nation. In Santa Fe, there's an ordinance prohibiting drivers from talking or texting on a handheld device. It's okay to talk if it's hands-free. The police department issued an average of 48 citations a month last year for talking on a handheld phone. The year before that, the monthly average was 30. This year's numbers aren't in, so we don't know. But the question now is it safe at all to talk while driving, whether hands-free or not? The National AAA organization has finished a study that indicates hands-free is not safer. Bruce Hamilton is head of research for the AAA Traffic Safety Foundation. I asked him for the details about his study.
We looked at cognitive distraction more broadly. And just for some context, there's been a good deal of research over the past several years of manual distractions and visual distractions, which take, you know, eyes off the road, hands off the wheel. But cognitive and mental distraction is the third piece of this, and it's much harder to study because observing a driver's brain is so difficult. And so we partnered with the University of Utah, and it's a first-of-its-kind look at six different hands-free driver tasks: cell phone, conversation with passengers, listening to the radio, interacting with speech-to-text systems and vehicles. And using brainwave measurements and other metrics, it actually was able to rate how distracting these tasks were relative to each other and some baseline anchors.
Well, I'm sure listening to the radio is no distraction at all, is it?
It's a very slight increase in cognitive workload, but, you know, fortunately it's not, you know, we're not ringing the alarm on that one.
Well, tell us about phones then. But what did you find out?
Well, in general, so the two listening ones, the listening to the radio and listening to a book on tape, were minor increases in cognitive workload, not really problematic. They were in the ones category on a scale of 1 to 5. Conversation with passenger and on a handheld or a hands-free phone were all in the twos. They were sort of a moderate level of distraction. And then interacting with the speech-to-text systems that are common in new vehicles, that are increasingly common in new cars, was a much higher level. It was in the threes.
There's a common belief that hands-free phones are safer than holding a phone and talking.
Correct. We do safety culture studies every year of the American public, and 3 in 4 drivers, roughly, tell us every year that they think that hands-free is the safe alternative to handheld, and that's not supported by this study, and it's not supported by existing research in the field either.
Is it the same or worse?
In our study, it was just about the same.
So there's no benefit to having an ordinance, as we do in Santa Fe, about you cannot talk holding a phone, but you can talk hands-free.
Well, and currently no states ban hands-free for all drivers.
But Santa Fe does ban handheld as
correct.
A city.
As a city, yeah. There are about 11 states and D.C. that ban handheld for all drivers, and then there's some counties and municipalities that add to that. But there's no state-level ban on hands-free for all drivers anywhere.
How did you do your study?
Well, we used 3 different experiments. There was a laboratory sort of baseline experiment, there was a driving simulator, and there was an instrumented vehicle that was actually driven around Salt Lake City, Utah. And in those 3 experiments, participants performed 6 common driver tasks, the ones that I just mentioned, as well as 2 sort of baseline anchor tasks. There was a non-distracted baseline condition, and then there was a very complicated math and verbal task that they had to do that sort of anchored what the high end of the scale would be. It's a very distracting, taxing task. And then about 5 different measures were recorded in each experiment. There was brain activity, there was a peripheral light detection test, there was eye and head movement tracking, there was lead braking and reaction time following distance, and there was subjective survey, you know, responses about workload and frustration and things. And all of that was aggregated into a score using statistical techniques. All of those measures across all the experiments and all of the tasks were standardized to create this scale.
For the drivers you were tracking physically, did they know? Were they part of the experiment? Were they aware of it?
They were aware that it was an experiment. They had, in order to get the brainwave activity, they needed to use a skull cap, which has connections with electrodes and things. And so they were actually all hooked up. And there was a light, the peripheral light detection test was something that was on a headband that was out to the corner of their peripheral vision. So they were very aware that they were in an experiment, yes.
Did you draw a correlation between the physical tracking on the road and the lab simulator experiment?
Yes, and that was one of the things that was very heartening for us, was that even though all the standardized scores were what we used for the rating scale, but each individual measure in each individual experiment all showed the same pattern. So it's not as if we had crazy results in one and, you know, other results in another one and just averaged them and said, good enough. You know, all of the measurements showed the exact same tracking all throughout the study, which was very, very heartening for us in thinking that it was a very credible and realistic study.
We've reported on this issue for years. One of the interesting studies I reported on some years ago was a Utah researcher who found that driving and talking on the phone, whether handheld or hands-free, was the equivalent of driving drunk.
Do you recall his name? It may very well have been the same Utah researcher that we were working with.
I don't recall his name, but it was a big study published widely.
Yeah, we were working with Dr. Strayer, David Strayer, and his team, Joel Cooper.
I believe that's him.
And others. Yeah, he's a very well-known researcher in this field. He's done some very pioneering cognitive distraction research over the past couple of years. And what was so interesting about this study was that it was the first one that, rather than using one sort of specific task as sort of a proxy for cognitive distraction, we really isolated that cognitive element, the mental distraction, across a variety of tasks.
But despite those studies and yours now, there's been no traction on getting anyone to take a serious look at all uses of cell phones while driving.
Well, I think, you know, as we were talking about earlier, there is this common perception that hands-free is the safe alternative, that hands-free devices are safe by virtue of the fact that they're hands-free. And I think that there's been an attitude that cognitive distraction, you know, has been approached with this innocent until proven guilty mentality. And what we're really trying to say with this study is, hey, let's put the brakes on this implementation of all these new technologies. Not that we can never have, you know, technology evolving in cars, but let's talk about what the science shows us before we're allowing people to do these things.
Well, what do you think is a good solution to the problem? Just ban cell phones entirely?
Well, I think that what we need to have first is a sort of open and honest conversation with all those involved to see what the science is telling us. You know, as we were saying, listening to the radio, not so much of a distraction. And once we can zero in on each of these tasks and just how distracting they are and then mapping them to crash risk, I think that would allow us to make those kinds of decisions.
Very interesting work. Bruce Hamilton, AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety. Many thanks.
Thanks very much.
At noon from KSFR News. In Washington, U.S. Senator Martin Heinrich of New Mexico has taken to the floor of the U.S. Senate today to call for action on climate change.
In New Mexico, we're seeing bigger fires, drier summers, and less snowpack in the winter. And as I speak these words, too many of our high elevation forests are burning. And with humidity levels lower and temperatures higher, we are dealing with fire behavior that is markedly more intense than what we've seen in the past. Over the last 3 years alone, we have seen two of the largest fires in New Mexico's history. With elevated temperatures, studies at Los Alamos National Labs predict that 3/4 of our evergreen forests in New Mexico might be gone by as early as 2050. At the same time, we're experiencing our driest two-year drought since record-keeping started in the mid-19th century. Flows in the Rio Grande are less than 20% of normal. Since the first of the year, central New Mexico, where I live, has seen less than 1 inch of rain. This is a tragedy, and we must start taking active steps to reverse it. We owe that to our children. We owe that to the next generation. In 1961, President John F. Kennedy made a bold claim that an American would walk on the moon by the end of the decade. 8 years later, Mr. President, Neil Armstrong did just that. Today, we face a similarly audacious challenge when it comes to addressing climate change. We need to think big, Mr. President, and we need to execute that.
U.S. Senator Martin Heinrich on the floor of the U.S. Senate today. Right now, 86 degrees in Santa Fe, upper 80s for highs. Look like we're right there already. Checking the numbers on Wall Street, everything is up. The Dow Jones is ahead, 124 points at 15,120. And in news from elsewhere, an explosion in Louisiana has injured about 30 people after touching off a fire at a petrochemical plant south of Baton Rouge. A city building inspector has been found dead of an apparently self-inflicted gunshot wound a week after a building collapsed at a site he had inspected in central Philadelphia. That collapse killed 6 people. And, of course, those fires burning in Colorado Springs have exploded in size, forcing tens of thousands of people to flee the area. We've got 60 seconds on our hands, just enough time for the old curmudgeon.
I refer to it as the Great Fall of 2013, when I tripped at home, changed the direction of my fall to avoid knocking over and smashing a marble sculpture, hitting the edge of an end table with my forehead, and bouncing my head into the wall, badly scraping it, my head not the wall. Somehow, I also sliced open my left thumb, probably about 4 or 5 stitches worth, but instead I used new skin on the cut. My thumb became infected. I took antibiotics. My thumb became uninfected, although I did pick up a different kind of infection that had nothing to do with my thumb. But I couldn't figure out why my thumb still hurt, even though my thumb was no longer infected. So 4 weeks after the great fall, I went to the doctor and asked why my thumb was still hurting. He said, "Let's take an X-ray." 2 days later, I went back to the doctor and walked out with a splint on my thumb for the double fracture, which was nothing to thumb my nose at, even if I could. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.